The following presentation was recorded at the 1999 Teachers Workshop at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
I copied it just as this fifth grader presented it to her teacher, and we'll just read down through there. It's entitled A New Beginning. She did this on her own, fifth grader. Background: grudges held since grade one. Jealousy over one another's talents, looks, etc. Remembering everything bad that happened. Forgetting that God made us in a special, unique way. Not understanding or respecting others' feelings. Whispering among yourselves instead of God. And Roman numeral 2, she put down circumstances. Getting exceptionally fed up with one another. Having groups instead of being one body. Groups cause hard feelings. Resentment builds tremendously. People get left out. We are no longer friends. Roman numeral 3, results. Having 10 million talks with the teacher. Teacher getting upset. We all get together and talk. Share things that have been stuffed up for years. We clear the mixed up feelings with our past behind us. We begin again. I like that. It typifies or exemplifies a little bit of what I think needs to happen in nurturing group life in a school. I don't know about you, but I'm on a mission. As a teacher, I want to equip people. That's what I want to do for the kingdom of God. I want to impart a vision for what God wants to do through a young person's life. You know, someone has made the statement, a teacher affects eternity. No one can tell where his influence stops. And I like the example. Some of you, if you keep up with music, you may have heard, may have noticed that Robert Shaw, famous choral conductor in America, probably the preeminent conductor of this century in choral music, died here about a month or two ago. And one time at a workshop, Mr. Shaw had a student. And he taught this student that when you sing the Hallelujah chorus from the oratorio of Judas Maccabeus, that it really helps the choir maintain the vitality of the piece by snapping on the second and fourth beats. So when they're singing that song, you're beating on 1, 2, 3. Okay. Well, he had a student. This student went on to become a choir director himself and had a church choir. He had a young high school student on his church choir in Michigan. Mr. Shaw is from, he was in Cleveland for a number of years and from the East. But this man was from Michigan, and he had a church choir, and he had a young high school student in his choir, and who, because of his influence, decided that he wanted to be a choir conductor. And so he went to school to learn how to be a choir conductor. And he went to the school that had the university that had hired his church choir conductor that he grew up with. And in that school, his conductor, the teacher, the professor, the former student of Mr. Shaw, taught him that when you do this piece, 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, that man went to Warsaw, Indiana, and he was teaching a public school. And he happened to have a student teacher named Brandon. And he taught me that when you do this piece, or any piece that, especially in the Baroque period, that you can, 1, 2. And it will help the group, whatever group is singing that line, it will help them maintain. And now, I've taught in Napanee, Indiana, and I taught a few of my students that. I'm working here at Faith Builders, and I teach a few people that. They go home. Where's that going to stop? Who knows? That's just one little example of how a teacher influences people. And when you nurture group life, I'm assuming already that you're teaching your students what Proverbs 1:7 says, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. You're teaching your students that a life-changing relationship with Jesus Christ is the most important thing that they can do or have happen to them. You're already telling them that school is more than preparation for a job. It's about becoming the person God wants you to be. And you're building character. You're teaching the content. What is the basis for group life? We call it nurturing group life. And I just want to remind us what the second commandment says. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. We want to develop that theme a little bit. But that's the basis. Jesus called to demonstrate our love to Him by our love to each other. And we have to be able to live and work with people. So my point in reminding you that you're already doing some things, this isn't perhaps the first or second thing on your list when you teach, but it is significant and it's important. Several things that I want to do in nurturing group life. Number one is I want to develop leaders. Servant leaders. I want to develop vision, courage, integrity in my students. I want to encourage those kinds of things. Young people need to see real needs being met. Second thing we want to do is achieve effective communication. Effective communication. I want to help students learn how to articulate clearly their ideas, thoughts, feelings to each other and to audiences. Effectiveness in any area of life requires some level of skill and communication. And young people need to learn how to communicate effectively, not just their ideas, but their very lives as well. As Paul said in 1 Thessalonians, that he reminds them and says, you know how I worked among you and shared the gospel. In fact, I shared my very life. That's included in effective communication. Third thing is team activities. Here we want to help the student experience the accomplishment of a goal that they could not or that would have been impossible by themselves. And these include things perhaps like choral experiences, team sport or activity, discipleship. And these include any kind of activity which cannot be carried out or experienced by the individual alone. Young people need to learn how to honor others above themselves. Acts of service, opportunities to help people less fortunate or less capable than what they are. Young people need to learn that it is better to give than to receive. And then meaningful relationships. I want to foster in the student the ability to have meaningful relationships. Help the student know how to enter deeply into the life of another. Make possible for the student an experience of brotherhood. Young people need to see that believers, as the Bible says, are competent to help one another. Well, how do we go about doing these five things? And I have a number of things I want to share with you today. It's not a comprehensive list. They're largely things that I have done as I've seen different needs in my students, try to find something that we can do, an activity or a project that will build in the group of students the kinds of qualities that I'm looking for. And you know, as I looked over this list, I realized again that, you know, these are not original with me. I just found them, heard them somewhere. What is original is the way in which I practiced it in my school. And so the way I present them here today may not work exactly in your school, but you can maybe take the idea, modify it, develop it, do what will accomplish the goal that you have. So I have a list of methods here for developing group life. And I want to point out, too, that along with making it work in your school, it has to be an expression of who you are. For instance, if you don't know how to share deeply out of your own life with another person, not even in the school necessarily, but if you are not able to share deeply with another person, another brother or sister, and tell them what's going on, it'll be very difficult for you to teach your students how to do that. In fact, you probably won't be able to do it. They will know, even if they've never seen you share or not share, they will know whether or not you're able to do that. It's called credibility. One of the things that I did was use cell groups. And what I mean by cell groups is just groups of three or four students who meet weekly or bi-weekly for the purpose of sharing personal struggles and praying for each other. At home, when I taught in Indiana, we had these groups meeting once a week. Every Tuesday morning, instead of opening devotional time, we would have cell groups. And I borrowed this idea from places like Fresh Start in southern Indiana. And if you've seen their material, you've seen what they call a daily moral inventory sheet, where you have 31 columns across the page, and on one side you have the negative, one side you have the positive. I've done it different ways. Sometimes I've had the student, at home I taught an individualized program, and so I could check regularly with the student as to how they were doing with that. It's more difficult for me here with the conventional classroom. I don't have as much one-on-one time with students. So I've not used that nearly as much. I'll do it for a month and then skip it for a while and do it again for another month, just so they can begin to think in those terms. However, I put these groups together and I assign a student leader. Now sometimes, depending on the group, it's been necessary to have some faculty members sit in. And I've done it both ways. Other students are very responsible. They enjoy what the group does and they make sure that it stays on and I don't have to worry how they're doing with it. But I assign student leaders. I may or may not assign a faculty member for each group. And a lot of weeks then I will assign a question. Okay, this week I want you to share with your cell group what one thing you're struggling with. Okay, and what's one temptation that's been on your mind in the past week? Next time it might be, tell the group about your relationship with your father. Just tell the group how it is. And after you're done talking about that, just spend some time praying for each other and encouraging each other in that relationship. Another time I may say, share with the group a hobby, something you really enjoy doing. What do you spend time doing? Or I'll tell them to take that DMI sheet and share two areas where you haven't been doing very well in the past week off of that sheet. So any number of discussions can go on there. Once in a while, then, I will have them also go around the group and say each person tells every other person in the group something positive, something they appreciate or have admired or noticed in that person's life. So, and I tell them how to do it. And if you've heard Fresh Start talk about this, you're familiar with it. You know, I say that you need to sit down and so if it's my turn to tell each person in the group, I'll look at Anthony if he's in my group and I'll say, Anthony, I love you and I just want you to know I really admire the way you play basketball and you don't lose your temper. Even when your team loses, I know you're one of the best players and I know it's really important for you to win and you really try your hardest, but you don't lose your temper. I just want you to admire that, okay? So I do that to each person in my group and they go around and then Anthony will go around each person in the group and say that. Maybe another week I'll say, now this time I want you to go around, I'll give them a jump on this because this is a little harder. I want you to go around and say one thing that you think a person could improve or grow, one area in which your fellow students in your group. And that does make us sweat because, you know, hey, I don't know, especially 7th, 8th graders, you know, they're like, you know, I don't know. But I say, well, I said, I don't want you to think about it this way, but what's something you don't like about that person? Could they change it? Could they work on it? Now, if it's something that isn't really something they can work on, you need to be kind and gracious and not say anything. But if it's something they can work on, we'll find a way to say that in a gracious way. And we do the same thing. We always start out with, I love you. And one thing I've noticed that you could improve is you lose your temper a lot in basketball. OK? Okay, and all that person is allowed to say, positive or negative, is to say thank you. Okay, and so there's not a big discussion or debate. No arguments are allowed to develop, and the person needs to receive it. And a lot of times, what I found happening is that next time the positive thing rolled around, a student took an opportunity to say, you know, I noticed you've been working on that. I shared it as an area that you needed to work on, and you've been growing in that area. Periodically, I haven't always done this, but periodically I've met with the student leaders, and at United Christian, we had about 30, 35 students in the high school, and so I had six or eight student leaders, and I would meet with them periodically and just talk about how the groups are going for them, what's going well, what's not going well. And it was a great leadership development opportunity because we could talk about that one year, especially I had a very good group of seniors, and I had a very bad group of freshmen, okay? And so these freshmen, they didn't care what the seniors thought. You know, normally, if you get positive things going in your high school, if you can do well with your older students, the younger ones will come along because the momentum is going the right way. Well, it was tough this year because the freshman class was just as big, maybe not one or two more students more than what in the senior class, and they were a rowdy bunch. And a number of them had either absent fathers or dads were not really working with their children, and so they were angry at the world and thought they were tough guys, and they just weren't going to take anything off of seniors. Seniors could, you know, push them on something, and I don't care what you think. This is what I'm doing, you know. Well, they get into those cell groups, and do those kind of people share very much? Not usually, especially not as freshmen. They're not going to, you know, they're not really sure what all is going on. They just know that they like some things and don't like others. And so it was a great opportunity to help my seniors take a look at how they relate to difficult people and how do you develop in someone a desire to grow? How do you develop in someone a desire to become more like Jesus rather than become more like the world? And so those are great opportunities. And you'll notice as we go down through these, there's a number of those five things we looked at, a number of those things that are happening: leadership development, effective communication, acts of service. All these things can happen a number of ways. Something else that we have done periodically is something as simple as prayer groups. And let's say you're doing it in a missions week, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But you take a chapel time and you divide students up into small groups, and you say, and maybe you put a list of things on the overhead that we want to focus on in prayer. And just have the students spend some time praying together. That can be very effective. One of the things that was evident when I began teaching at United was the fact that there was no music tradition in that community. Now, I had grown up in that community, but there really was not any kind of music program that was continuous and ongoing and strong. And so when I began teaching, the first year I taught, the board was wanting to make sure, because I was pretty young, and they wanted to make sure that I had the support I needed. And they made it clear to the students as well as to me that everybody is going to be on high school choir. And they knew that music was my interest. And so they said, look, you're going to be on choir, and we want cooperation and all of that. Well, that was great support. But, you know, I had a handful of people that's just the last place they wanted to be. And so I decided after that year, with the board's permission, I said, can I just have the people that want to be on? I said, I don't care if I just have three people out of 30. I'll gladly work with those three, and I'll make it worth their time if they just give it all they've got. So they said, sure, go ahead. And so that first year I had 19 out of 33, I think, that wanted to be on choir. And one of the things we did and never done before at that school, we went on a little weekend tour. And they were good enough. They could go on a little weekend. And, you know, the day we drove out of the parking lot with the bus was a great moment for me. Took all year to get there. But, you know, the 10 that boo-hooed choir, stood in the window watching us go, you know. And we were waving, they were waving, you know, they acted tough about it. But the teacher that stayed behind said, well, you should have heard them after you left. They were wishing they'd be on that group. Well, the next year I had something like, 26 out of 33. And the year after that, by the time I left, there was maybe one or two people that weren't on choir. Now, we had other music things they were required to take, but choir was not one of those that was required. Well, what does choir do? It requires cooperation and coordinated effort. You can't, you know, we don't want to hear a soprano. We want to hear the sopranos. And we don't want to hear a bass. You want to hear the basses. So it requires some team effort, cooperation. When someone messes around, the people that are serious about it say, hey, come on, let's get going here. You know, I love when I see students doing that kind of thing. And weeks of rehearsal build the team spirit. One of the things we did as well was take a Friday night and a Saturday and stay overnight somewhere and just rehearse all Friday evening, bring some pizza in Friday night, play some games, and rehearse Saturday morning, spend some time in extended devotional times and individual quiet times to help people focus on what we wanted to accomplish in choir and giving programs. And all of those things worked very well. I was amazed. I had no idea. I never dreamed this could happen, that in 5 years' time, the musical taste of the majority of the students changed completely. And students, most of them like country music or Southern gospel or that kind of thing. You know, I'm not saying anything wrong with Southern gospel if you like it. I personally don't care for it. And so what happened, though, even within a year of joining choir, I had students say to me, you know, I used to listen to this music over here all the time, but now I can't stand that stuff. I just can't stand it. And so I think there's just a lot of wonderful things that can happen in choir. I taught individualized program, as I said earlier, and so one of the things, first of all, how many of you teach individualized programs? Okay, there's a few of you here. One of the things that you'll find is that some subjects don't seem to lend themselves very well to independent study. At least it's difficult to generate a lot of motivation. Now, some things work better independent, but there are some that don't. And so one of the things I did was take those subjects. And so, for instance, let's just take government. Unless you have a student that really loves those kinds of things, a lot of students don't really get excited about government. And well, you can imagine studying that independently. A lot of students burn out on government. Well, so periodically I would just take something. Perhaps there's a bill pending in Congress, and I would just take one of those and talk about what the issues were, what the debate was about, and what was going to have to happen in order for it to become law. And just take 10 minutes talking about that, and I had a number of students just get all excited. Say, well, that's interesting. We like that. We just don't like this other stuff over here. And so many lectures can be very effective. I did a number of things. We did some creative writing as part of a group exercise. I had a song leading course that I took them through. We did some speeches. We talked about current events. Sometimes I read a joke of the day, and a teacher that was there, I didn't do this. I'm not enough of a biologist to do this, but he would dissect a worm or just dissect a pig, and not everybody was in biology at the time, but they would work through it as a class, as a group. Reading a story, discussing a poem. I read a poem one time to that first group I had that hated, where half of them didn't like choir, and you know what goes along with choir. Anything that's maybe a little bit refined is out, you know. And so one day I took a poem, and it's one of those that was written with an accent, and I'm not really good at those things, but I did try to present it in a way that highlighted the accent and the energy and so on of the poem, and it was amazing. They gave me an ovation when I was done, okay. The guy that started it was the guy that hated choir. And so I thought I didn't do too bad there. So it helps. We also did Missions Week. ACSI, if you're familiar with that organization, they have a Missions Day or do they call it Missions Week? I haven't worked with them for a couple of years now on that. But at home, we coordinated our Missions Emphasis Week with theirs. And they have a number of really good materials they send out for that. And some of the things that we planned, the longer we did it, the more we developed some of our own emphases. But during that week, we would often have chapels every morning, whole school chapel or elementary chapel and high school chapel. We brought in visiting speakers. We brought in young people who had just been in VS, and we had them share their experiences with high school students. On Wednesday evening, we had the churches, four or five churches would cancel their midweek services and come, and we would invite a special speaker in, let's say from CAM or Compassion International or Operation Mobilization, some of those speakers that we would have come in and present what they're doing in missions. And just a great opportunity for people to focus on missions and highlight that as an opportunity, as something that God may bring into their life. Any local people involved in missions, we brought them in. We had our doctor had been a medical missionary to Papua New Guinea for a number of years before his wife developed cancer. Had to return home, and we had him and his wife come in and share what they were doing there. It was just tremendously fascinating to have people like that come in with personal experiences and share with your student body. Something else I did in many classes, I failed to mention, individualized curriculum always had a unit on Shakespeare. And students just absolutely despised that because they would sit in their desk and try to read Shakespeare for the first time in their life. Okay? Well, you can imagine that's meant to be enjoyed out loud. Okay? Aloud. You need to hear that to really begin to catch what's going on there. And so by pulling them out in a mini class, we were able to help increase appreciation there. Something else that we emphasized was community service. And one of the teachers that was there after I left did a really great job on this. He contacted the mayor of our town, and he said, our students would like to be your servants for one day. Okay, we would just like to do whatever you think needs to be done in our town. We'd like to do it for you. And we just want to do this as a volunteer effort. And you come up with a list, and you let us know what needs to be done, and we'll do it. Well, that day came, and they were washing fire trucks and raking leaves and mowing lawns and sweeping parking lots, and the pictures got in the paper, and everybody was excited about that day. Now, what that did, in addition to helping students become more aware of what happens at the local EMS squad or the fire department or city hall, in addition to all that, it left a positive testimony, I believe, for our school, and a tremendous way to let people know that this little school over here on the corner is interested in what in contributing to the community. And so it was very good. I know that different times we had a pancake and sausage breakfast. Now, this wasn't our school, but it was our youth group. And just to give an example here, the police crew always came through our pancake and sausage breakfast. And they'd always come through in a group. And you know, they always said, if every young person in this town was like you people, we wouldn't be necessary. And a tremendous opportunity for young people to hear those kinds of comments from those people. It puts a face on law enforcement. You know, sometimes the lingo that can develop about police, it really puts a face on that, puts a human side to it, and I believe makes it much harder to say those kinds of derogatory things. Something your school may or may not do is fundraiser. At our school back home, we didn't have fundraisers. We just, if we needed money, we left another offering, which seldom needed to happen. Here at Faith Builders, we have a unique situation where we're more of an independent school, and we've done this on a limited basis. And so it was new to me when I came here, and I particularly enjoyed the benefit of community interaction again. It brings people into our doors that normally would never come. And so it helps to raise some funds that students are able to work together. Students take a lot of pride in being able to pull it off, and we assign everybody a job to do. And it's a good time together, and we can talk to a lot of people, see a lot of people that wouldn't normally see. And I just enjoy it for the community involvement again. Something else that's very effective is a school yearbook and newspaper. If you've ever done a yearbook, you know the amount of work and time and energy that those take. And sometimes I've reconsidered my calling in the middle of crunch time on yearbooks. But if you work at it, organize it, find some resource people that can help you, it really can become a manageable, rewarding job. And so students get to work together, spend time together. Again, team effort, communication skills. Editors, you know, they've come up through the ranks on that yearbook committee, and they're now senior editor, and they say, I know what I didn't like about this, and I know what I liked about that. And if you develop it, you can soon have students pretty much managing and running that and making it happen. And that's very rewarding to see students be able to announce things when need to be announced and corral the right kind of people to do the things that they're good at. And it can be very rewarding time. Paper is a way for students to get writing opportunities, have their work published. It can be very motivational. Well, what happens in phys ed? Doesn't need a whole lot of explanation there, but if you've ever played together, you know the level of interaction and cooperation that takes. Especially as you get into junior high and high school, I find that winning becomes pretty important to young people sometimes. And I've just really enjoyed the opportunity to help especially fellows sit down and say, okay, so what are we doing here? Why are we doing it? What's our goal? And how can we help each other? And I have at times just stopped a game and said, okay, let's talk about what's going on here. And if it's getting too intense, and those have been good discussions. I think it helps for them to be able to discipline themselves and know how to keep that temper under pressure. It's a good life skill. Something else that we've done is have what we call split chapels, where at home I had a secretary take the high school ladies, and I took the fellas. Every Friday morning we had split chapel, and it was a great opportunity just to sit down, and we always pulled chairs up in a circle and just had some good discussions about what was going on in their lives and pertinent issues. I remember we talked one time about leadership. I asked the fellows, I said, now let's talk about why it's hard to go ahead and organize your volleyball team when you're out there. Nobody's really in charge. Why is it that you don't want to step forward and say, okay, let's set it up this way? This is a good opportunity to say, well, you know, I feel stupid, you know, doing that, or I'm scared people won't take it off of me, or any number of things they might feel about doing that. So, well, let's talk about what it means to be a leader. What does it mean to be someone who takes initiative and moves into a situation that's a little uncertain, and be able to make something happen? And moral issues, all kinds of character issues that can be discussed in a way that might not be appropriate in a mixed setting. The ladies, I know they often talked about relationships, what it meant to be a lady, gave each other some feedback on how to develop really good manners and etiquette and so on. What time is this over? 2:30. Okay. This is something that I'm calling Circle Up. And it's, again, borrowed from places like Fair Play and Bald Eagle, boys camps. And I found this especially helpful here at Faith Builders, where we have a number of students from the community, may not have families. Now, I don't know how you find it in your school, but I found that the stronger my families were, the less problems I had. And it took us a little phone call home, and I could solve a problem without ever doing much of anything, you know. And here it's not that way. I make a phone call home, and they might be concerned, but they may not even have the skill, ability to deal with it themselves. They'll simply tell you, yeah, it does the same thing here, okay? Well, so what do you do in those situations? Well, this has been, quite honestly, a frightening thing for me. I don't really enjoy opening something up. But what we do, have done different times, and I'm using it more and more as my courage increases, as a way of dealing with students who act up in front of everybody. Okay, so it's a public thing. And I've spent a lot of time one-on-one with these people, and with limited success. I mean, they can hear me say these things about so much, and they've heard what I have to say about it, and there's some response. I mean, I think I've developed some good relationships there. However, it doesn't seem to pack the punch that it does when you have a problem. And for instance, this year earlier, I had a student, and we were out playing volleyball. And we were just pulling it together to begin the game, and I sensed that something was going on with a number of the ladies. And I could just tell there was a little bit of whispering, and then there'd be these glances across the net. And it was the beginning of the period. I said, I'm not going to deal with this the whole period. So I just said, okay, let's stop for a minute. I said, what's going on here? And one student had been complaining to me a little bit, so I knew a couple of people that were involved. So I said, let's gather up here around the net a little bit. And I said, I'll just call him, Bob, what do you know about this? What's going on? And so Bob gave his 20 seconds of what he thought was the problem. And of course, I knew the other person kind of the other side, and I said, okay, Jenny, what's your side of the story here? And we just began to talk about it. Well, pretty soon, accusations were being made. I said, okay, is that true? It's not true. I did not say that. I said, okay, what do you say to that? Well, I thought she said it. How's come? You know, and we go on a discussion. And pretty soon, a student is saying, well, I think the problem here is that you're jumping to, I'll tell another student this, you're jumping to conclusions about whatever. Or I think you get upset and you think that as soon as we're talking, you think we're talking about you. And we weren't talking about you. We were just talking about this. Okay, now those are pretty straight words, but I was amazed. This student, if I would have pulled this student out or confronted them in front of the whole group, this student would have probably, just the way this person is, they would have, at best, they would have just clammed up and had a scowl the rest of the period. Or they would have completely exploded and I'd had to send them back to the room. One of the two things. Well, this time, there was sort of a tight look on the face, but the student made it through the period in a reasonable way. And by the end of the period, was fine. Well, that can be a tremendous experience for students because it helps students deal more honestly. Here recently, I had a student accused of... this is a junior high age student accused of betting her friend that she could get a guy to kiss her. Okay, one of the other guys. And this is kind of done in sort of a off the cuff way. They got to think about it the next morning. They talked to each other and they said, you know, that's pretty stupid. We're not, you know, we better knock that off. And then they found out that this guy might have heard they made the bet. So they went to him right away and said, look, that was really dumb of us. We're sorry. Hey, you know, trust us. It's all off. Okay. Well, here's where communication is. Junior high level people, this guy heard this gal being serious about it. He was probably so spaced out the possibility that he left. He walked out on her thinking she was serious when she was in fact trying to apologize. He didn't ask her what she was trying to say. He just, I'm out of here. And so anyway, this comes to my attention, and I walk up to class, not sure what I'm going to do with this. And I see the student who had told me about it, and who was making the accusation, making this a big thing. This student said this, did this, wants to do that. And so I come upstairs, and Mr. Lehman and I, we see her standing there in tears about something, all upset. And people aren't being nice to her. So I walk in the classroom. I said, I want to know what's going on with... I asked the two students I knew were involved. I said, what's going on? Well, so they didn't say right away. They said, we made this bet. They didn't want to tell the whole class, you know. We made this bet, and it was really dumb, and so we apologized, and it really, you know, it's nothing. And, it, you know, we'll never do it again. And so then this gal that was all upset, that had started the rumor, making it, blowing it up, she said, well, how's come you made the bet? And they again explained in more detail. Anyway, long story short, the whole class soon found out what the bet was. And a few students said, well, hey, I admire the fact that they went to the guy and made it right rather than just covering it up. And so, well, that was good feedback to have. Someone else said, well, you know, the problem here is that to this student that was all upset, you're taking things that you hear and blowing them way out of proportion. And you were lying. And the student says, I was not lying. You know, how's come you made the bet? You made the bet. Anyway, the discussion goes, it gets pretty animated. And so the students began to say, look, they began to address the larger issue that I've been working on for the last year and a half. They said, look, you are lying all the time. In fact, I saw you steal my candy. I just didn't say anything to you about it. But you're lying all the time. And so this student just clammed up. This was always phase two of this student's response. Just clam up with a scowl, not looking at anybody. And they began to appeal to the student on the fact, said, look, we know you lie. Why don't you just admit it? Well, how's come then, finally, the student, after the pressure's on, how's come you're all against me? You're all against me. I just know you're all against me. And the students began to say, we're not against you. We love you. We care about you. In fact, we don't even care that you lie. You don't have to go back on everything right. Just admit that you need help. And so this went on, and finally one student in the back of the class, a student that had made the bet originally, got up, and she said to this student, she tried to talk to her from the back of the class. This took an hour and 15 minutes, by the way. And she went up and knelt in front of this student who was not looking at anybody. In the front of the room, knelt in front of the student so the student had to look at her. And because the student had just said, you know why I do all everything I do? This is, you know, the game was up. I mean, everybody knew what she was doing. She goes, you know why I do what I do? My mom hates me. And so this student got up and said, let me tell you something. My mom kicked me out of my house 5 years ago. I haven't seen my mom for 5 years. And I have five younger brothers. And my mom knew that I loved them like my own son. This is a freshman gal talking now. My mom knew I loved them like my own sons, but she kicked me out. She doesn't remember my birthday. She never mentioned my name at Christmas. And she just pleaded with that student for probably 15 minutes, which the student now is crying, okay, but saying nothing. Another student got up and read John 8 to the class. She goes, I want to say something. Took her Bible up, sit up front, and said, I want to read John 8. I'm going to put lying instead of adultery in this passage, and read that passage and said, neither do I condemn thee, go and sin no more. And it was an outstanding moment. I never experienced anything like it in my life. But it was the right things came together at the right time. And this student pleaded probably, this gal that said she hadn't seen her mom in 5 years, she said, yesterday, get a load of this, yesterday my mom sent me a letter in the mail and told me that she loved me. 5 years. And she goes, and of course her point was forgiveness. That's what you got to do. You have to forgive. You cannot blame forever. You have to forgive. And so finally, I asked the question. I said, Jenny, do you want help? And she nodded her head. And a number of girls got up and came up in front of the room, gave her a hug, crying, gave her a hug. Her sisters got up and gave her a hug, and they had been incredibly antagonistic relationships between her and her sisters. Got up, gave her a hug, told each other they loved each other, told her they forgave her for all those things. And we then took a few minutes to talk about what are we going to do when Jenny loses her temper again, or if she starts lying, or if she thinks, because a number of students had said, hey, I used to struggle with lying too. I know how hard it is. It's not worth it. A number of students had said that throughout the discussion. So we talked about how we're going to help her, because it's probably not going to be an overnight change. How are we going to help? Well, one student said, I'm going to love you, Jenny, by telling you when you're lying. I'm going to tell you. I thought, I used to think I loved you by covering up, but I'm going to tell you, I'm going to love you by telling you. And so a number of students said a few things like that. And then, you know, the burning question in my mind was, the statement I wanted to hear from this student was, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Well, we hadn't heard that yet. She had nodded her head, said, I need help. But, and one of the seniors, just in such a neat, nonchalant, off-the-cuff sort of way, said, Jenny, are you sorry? And she nodded her head. And I asked everybody, I said, did you see her nod her head? And they said, yeah, we saw her. And affirmed that. And a tremendous, tremendous experience. That person lost two excuses for the reasons life didn't work for her that day. She lost the excuse that my mom hates me, that everybody's out to get me. Everybody's out to get me. She lost it that day because 17 people sat in that room and said, we love you. We're not out to get you. And then she also lost the ability to lie and get away with it because she knew people were going to tell her. And she knew they were going to tell her because they loved her. Again, you have to make it work. You know, a number of times during that hour, 15 minutes, I didn't know what was going to happen next. It wasn't like I knew what I was doing. I don't want you to get that idea at all. It was some scary moments, wondering if I should say something. I try not to say much because students were doing well with it. But I've talked to the teachers, and, you know, your issues may be much smaller. But they too have found that sometimes it helps to open up an issue and let it be discussed. And let people serve each other, minister to each other in ways that you as a teacher could not. And finally, one-on-one discussions. I've talked about that. But just again, an opportunity to challenge students on an individual basis. Are you being who you could be? Talk to one of the oldest high schooler that rides the bus. I don't like that bus because too many things happen on it that I don't like. But I ask him, he's a quiet guy, very athletic. He's respected because of his athletic ability, but he's very, very quiet, doesn't say much, has an explosive temper. But I ask him, I said, I'll just call him John. I said, John, are you doing everything you could be doing on that bus? You know, when they start teasing each other about boyfriend, girlfriend, or when somebody starts yelling at somebody, you think you could once in a while stand up and say, hey, come on, you know? And those are opportunities you can use to do that. In conclusion here, I want to read a short story that I believe typifies what we'd like to see happen in our classrooms. I'm taking this as a story given by Dr. John Holmes, who works for ACSI, relates this story. A few years ago at the Seattle Special Olympics, 9 contestants, all physically or mentally disabled, assembled at the starting line for the 100-yard dash. At the gun, they all started out, not exactly in a dash, but with a relish to run the race to the finish and win. All, that is, except one boy who stumbled on the asphalt, tumbled over a couple of times, and began to cry. The other eight heard the boy cry. They slowed down and looked back. They all turned around and went back, every one of them. One girl with a Down syndrome bent down and kissed him and said, "This will make it better." All nine linked arms and walked across the finish line together. Everyone in the stadium stood, and the cheering went on for several minutes. People who were there are still telling the story. And I just want to encourage you, people that are in your classrooms can experience things long after they're gone, they'll be telling the story.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.